Chapter 11. Off to the office. Spain wasn't as bad as I'd been expecting. Actually, I got quite a surprise out there, and what made it even more remarkable was that it came from Barney. Dad and Rachel went out clubbing every night, but three evenings we all went out to dinner together first. Going plush, Gran called it. We got taxis down to Puerto Banús each time. Barney said it was the posh end of Marbella. I think he was right. The streets were so full of supercars it was like being on the set of Top Gear. People wore clothes that you normally only saw on mannequins in windows of exclusive shops. And all the white people were so dark, either murky orange or a really weird brown, like their skin was coffee-stained. The older they are, the darker the shade, and the more wrinkles they have, same as Barney. There were whole streets that were mostly bars and restaurants and clubs. Everything was so much cleaner and smarter than back home. I kind of saw why my grandparents liked living here, and the warmth was supposed to make it easier if you had arthritis, which all old people have. We went to Kono's on the first night. It had a huge open courtyard in the middle, with a fountain right at the centre. The vines overhead were combined with tiny lights, like bright stars in the leaves. It was kind of cool, and Barney got all excited when he saw some Premier League footballers at a table down the other end. The girls sitting with them had dresses a lot shorter than the one Rachel wore, and I'd thought that was small enough. They were younger than Rachel, too, like they could have been senior pupils at St. George's.
"You going to have a beer then, lad?"
Barney asked me with a laugh as we sat down.
"You leave Jules alone," Gran told him. "No thanks," I said. "I don't like beer."
"You've tried some then, lad. Good on you."
"I don't like the smell," I told him. "Olfactory response is a strong indicator of taste."
"Blimey, a proctor who doesn't like beer? Can't have that. We'll have to break you in slowly, eh, lad? Start you off on some lady beer."
"On what?"
"Lady beer. A shandy, lad, a shandy."
"Oh." "He'll be all right," Dad said to Barney.
"Now you make sure you order a starter as well as a dessert," Gran told me. "I still think you're too thin."
I opened the menu. It was huge, and mainly fish, which is the biggest cause of food poisoning, apart from rice in takeaways. But fortunately, all the dishes had an English translation underneath, so I could avoid the really dangerous bits. Barney clapped his hands loudly.
Come on, garçon, a man can die of thirst in here."
"Behave,"
Gran said in a sharp voice.
"It's all right, girl, they all know me in here. They shouldn't mind."
He turned to me, suddenly solemn.
"I knew what it was like here before they built this town."
"Do you?"
"Oh, Jules," Gran said, patting my hand. "You should listen to this. It's right spooky."
"Soon as we came here," Barney said, "I knew it. I knew the land, the hills, the shore. Didn't I, girl?"
"He did," Gran agreed. "Very first time, when we drove in along the coast road, he said to me, 'Girl,' he said, 'there's some big rocks round the next corner. And you know what?"
"There were some big rocks around the corner?" I asked.
"There were, Jules. No word of a lie."
"I remember it from decades ago," Barney said. "Turn of the century, like last century, when this was just empty land. Banús built the marina back in the early 70s, and the rest of the development sprouted out after that, until you reach what you got today. So I reckon I must have lived here in an earlier life. I picked up Spanish dead quick, too, like it's my second language."
I just stared at him in shock. "What else do you remember?"
"The land. I remember the land. And the sea. It was hard times back then. I reckon I fought in the Civil War.
Which side? Dad muttered.
You can laugh, son, Barney said stiffly. But it's real, Jules, I swear it.
Do you have a good memory, Barney? I asked. It was amazing. I'd never thought anyone else in the family had a memory like mine, especially not Barney.
Best there is, he twitched a grin. Never forgot a debt back in the day, did I?
He nudged Gran.
He didn't, Gran agreed.
I still remember them now, all the amounts down to the last penny.
I remember everything too, I told him. The last time you visited us in Yaxley, 3 years 7 months ago, you were wearing Levi jeans and a green shirt, with black and yellow Reebok trainers.
Blimey, Barney grunted.
And Gran, you were in an orange blouse and a black cardigan with silver ladybird buttons. Your handbag was leopard skin with a gold chain strap.
I remember that handbag, she exclaimed. I've still got it somewhere.
Years out of season now, she confided to Rachel.
And you, lad, had red shorts and a T-shirt with them daft minions on it, Barney said smugly. The ones off of the film.
I did, yes.
Barney gave Dad a sly glance.
Jules, I think the brain skipped a generation.
Rachel was looking at me with a very surprised expression.
Do you really remember everything?
I nodded.
Yes, I keep telling you I do. 17 times in total now. What about you, Dave? She asked Dad. Can you do it?
Not quite like that, he said with an irritated grimace.
So did you have a past life? I asked Barney.
No other way to explain it, lad.
That makes him a Buddhist, Dad said with a chuckle. Imagine that.
I'm not a bleeding Buddhist. They all come back as dogs or spiders or something.
Only if you've been a bad boy, Gran said knowingly. So right now it should be a toad, a big fat one.
Barney gave me a cheerful smile.
Ignore them, lad. We know the truth, don't we?
Yes, we do. The Monday after we got back, I went to the office, Michael Finson's office. It was in a long concrete and glass building just off Canada Square. I hung around on the pavement on the other side of the road. There were a lot of companies with offices in the building. It was incredibly busy. Everybody went in and out through the main entrance. Watching it, I remembered how Michael hated the revolving door in the middle. He always used one of the ordinary doors on either side. There were people in dark suits standing outside with Secret Service earpieces, the ones with the coils of clear plastic tubing that vanished down into their collars. They smiled at the people going in who were all dressed in expensive suits. The only difference between them was their ties, like they were all in competition to have the brightest one. I caught one of the security people glancing over at me a couple of times, but she didn't start talking into her suit cuff like they do in the films. I felt a lot safer in Docklands than I did in Islington. It's like a Kenan Abbott exclusion zone. His type simply don't belong here. Michael Finson came out of the building, using a side door, at 12:37. It was the face I'd recognized in the Facebook photos. He was really real. My legs went all tingly and weak, the same sensation you get with vertigo. I used to get it on fairground rides. When I was younger, Dad took me on the rides until I cried so much, Mum stopped him. Michael was with a couple of colleagues. They set off across Jubilee Park, talking and laughing together. It must be nice to have friends like that. People who you enjoy being with. Then Michael looked around, and he wasn't smiling. I froze. I thought he'd realized who I was.
but he just kept scanning all the people on the street. And I remembered why. Vladimir McCann. Mike's memory made me shiver. Giotti is already in bed when I come out of the bathroom. She is sitting up with her laptop on her knees, frowning at the screen. The light glints off the diamond in her engagement ring. She never takes it off, not even at night. I slip under the duvet and snuggle up beside her. Her frown only gets deeper, which isn't good. "What's up, babe?" I ask. She sighs and closes up the laptop.
"Someone from before."
"Before?" I get the disgruntled look she always spikes me with when I've said something truly dumb.
"Before you."
"Oh, right."
"He's called Vladimir McCann. It wasn't serious, not like you."
She gives me a small smile and squeezes my arm.
"We went out for a few months, that's all. He wasn't right."
I look at her laptop. "What happened to him?"
"He's not well, mentally, I mean."
"What?" She reluctantly opens the laptop for me. It's her Facebook page. I start to read what Vladimir has written in her visitor posts. She's right. He is ill. It's all nonsense. Most of it incoherent. Disconnected from reality. But in among the bizarre paragraphs about how the world is falling apart are disturbing passages. Personal ones. About how she knows what she's done is wrong. About how she shouldn't have left him. How that weekend they spent in Portsmouth will haunt him. And that is entirely her fault.
"We never even went to Portsmouth," she tells me sadly.
The end of it is a long rant about how badly he is suffering now he can see the truth. How that suffering wouldn't end. How she will have to face up to what she's done. And that will be dark for her. Very dark. "I'm going to the police," I tell her.